the little lady told me I can go ahead. First of all, I just want to mention it's Sunday morning, the 28th of June, 2020. I want to say Shavua Tov to all my wonderful students on the screen and to those that will yet listen on YU Torah around the great expanse of Jewish existence. It's not an easy period, but we have to do the best we can under the circumstances. As we sit here, the government is meeting, and could be that the time this year is over, I'll find out there's a seger and I can't get home. But Dayalet Sara Bishata. We're dealing with a very interesting topic, and that is a particularly interesting shir, because all along I've developed the idea that Klal Yisrael has an inner sense that ultimately we determine the halacha. It doesn't mean the Klal Yisrael, those who are out in the street, and Mark Licht, I already said good morning to you, predicting you'll get on soon. It doesn't only mean, it means the Jews who care, the Talmidei Chachamim, the people responsible for the continuity of the Jewish people. And we saw a number of instances where Klal Yisrael goes lekula. And here we have three very fascinating topics where Klal Yisrael goes lechumrah. And we spoke last week about a bike on Shabbat, on Yontif, Shabbat where there's an Erev, Yontif even without an Erev. And the truth is, it's pretty hard to find an Issa why you can't use a bike on Shabbat. And I gave you sources, the Gemara in Beitza, the wheels may create furrows, a tricycle you can use, those are solid wheels, it's a little kid. There may be other reasons, Shem Yitakein, Morty Yitarikin, said Edith Nemanat, that he's not only an atomic scientist, but he knows how to fix a bike as well. So that goes all back to the whole sugya in Masechet Beitza, Tikkun Mana, etc. I want to mention my dear Talmid, Rabbi Norman Schless. So he sent me an email. The first part applies to Monday Shia. The second part applies to today. Rebbe, I hope you are well. Just wanted to let you know on your next trip to the States, wherever it will be, you can rest assured for two things. Both Coca-Cola and Drake's Cakes are OU certified, and I go to both facilities. By the way, they have improved on the devil talks in that they are now covered with chocolate fudge. All right, that's what we spoke about, the Drakes and Devil Dogs on Monday Shir dealing with Kashrut. He's the Rav HaMachshir for the OU. This is today's Shir. Lastly, in light of your lecture regarding riding bikes, I remember on my last visit to Israel, there were children as well as adults all over riding bicycles on Shabbat and Yontif, with their tzitzit flying behind them. I have to say that with all due respect to Normie, and I'm samach on him with Coca-Cola and Drake's, I never yet saw an adult from Jew riding a bike, driving a bike on Shabbat. I asked around, and a number of my neighbors all said they don't have a recall. So I don't know what I'm referring to. Yes, you see kids on tricycles, but I haven't seen a Hasidish Yid or a kid with a tzitzit flying driving a bike on Shabbos. On Yom Kippur, you all know what's happened in Tel Aviv and other areas. They're all on bikes. So I once, we had a dialogue, a friend of mine, myself, does that really disturb you? So I said, look, there are two ways to look at it. Either we love to see the streets totally empty on Tel Aviv, or maybe Baruch Hashem, they're just driving their bikes, riding their bikes, and not driving cars. So you understand it's you can have a reaction either way. But halacha l'maisa, I never recall on Shabbos seeing someone driving. So I don't know what Norm is referring to. It could be he's confusing younger kids with older kids and tricycles with bicycles. But if anyone wants to come and tell me later if you recall seeing someone on a bike. But what is very fascinating is I got a communication from my Talmud, Alan Schwartz. I've taught a number of Alan Schwartzes. This is Alan Schwartz, who lives in Beit Shemesh. And he, remember, I quoted Shmirat Shabbat Gehilchach, and I quoted the footnote. He enlightened me that one part of the footnote refers you to a sefer by Reb Chaim Na'er. He was a great posek in Yerushalayim, and you all know him from Sheyurim. He was an expert on Revi'it, the Kazayit, etc. And what evidently he is saying, our regular bicycles have pneumatic tires. Am I pronouncing it right, the Morty? Pneumatic tires? Okay. And what is that? That is to say, they are inflatable. The rubber covers the inner tube, which is filled with air. The air pressure has to be monitored, and it is very common to have to pump up the tires. This certainly can be a problem of metakin mana makabapatish. The child's tricycle, however, has solid tires. A thick piece of solid rubber covers the wheel. And of course, there is no need to fix it in the course of riding it. Your child's tricycle can last generations without ever getting a flat. In fact, this is precisely the issue what the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchat HaSos is referring to. And that's the source. In other words, it's not the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchat. He mentions the Gemara in Beitza, but he gives you this reference to the Ksalta Shulchan, Reb Avraham Chaim Na'er, Simen Kuf, in the Badei HaShulchan, at the very end of the Simen. His discussion there is playing ball on Shabbos, which Reb Chaim Na'er is very much against. He states that those who approve of playing ball are only being mati the classic ball, which is made of a leather covering filled with wood or soft fabric, like a baseball or a softball, as opposed to the modern football in which a rubber sack is inserted in the leather and filled with, quote, wind, evidently used the word ruach, by means of a special tool called the pump and tied with laces. He states that when it loses air, as often happens, it is necessary to untie the laces, fill it with air, and retile the laces. It sounds from his description that the footballs of his time, 1933, the sefer appeared, did not have a valve pierced through the leather, and that to pump it, you actually had to untie it and retie it. Both tying the laces and making it usable by inflating it are malachat. And this may very well be the difference between tricycles and bicycles. Interesting that a bicycle, you pump air into the tire, and a tricycle comes solid, that you don't have to touch it. It does not get a flat. Anyway, be it as it may, all these reasons, l'chol hayoter, we're only talking about a derabanan at the most. And could be there was ample room. The Svadik Poskim were matir, but in modern times, there seems to be unanimity that even in Flatbush, a modern Svadik Poskim withheld publishing his Tshuva Lekula, and it may have to do with the times. What you could be matir at a time when the norm was Shmirat Shabbat, today to be matir, people will say, well, that guy is going on his bike on Shabbos with his tzitzit flying in the air. I can use my car on Shabbos. Zelechud v'zelechud. And the average Jew is not a Talmud Chacham, unfortunately. And he doesn't understand the world of difference between a bike and a car. So, halacha l'maisa, they asa. Let me end off the topic by quoting once again from Rabbi Eliezer Melamed, Peninat Chil Halacha, Shabbat Chelik Bet. And if you go to page 131, he also states, again, long footnote, what is really the Isha, but he says, Muskam al poskim ha'achronim, she'asul lirkov al ofanayim b'shabbat. Some say, because Shem Yetzei Chutz L'Tchum. All right, I don't know if that applies in New York. It's not shaykh to go Chutz L'Tchum in New York. Wherever you go, there are houses. It's not shaykh. I think they were even matter the George Washington Bridge that it's not beyond Chun Shabbos to cross over on Shabbos because immediately you hit houses on either side. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But that's what I recall from 70 years ago, let's say. V'yeshomrim she'im teyarat hakala b'ofnayim v'yavodat hakeim. And it could be, like we said, that's the Shmir Shabbat Hilchata. You want to fix it in Shabbos, Tikkun Mana. Also, is it an Issa D'Oraita, Issa D'Rabbanan, etc. I mean, untying a football and tying it up again, if you're going to untie it and tie it, if the game goes on and air goes out again. So it's certainly, it's not an Issa D'Oraita. It's a temporary knot, but okay. But here he says, and I think this is the bottom line, that the real reason is Mishun Uvda Dechol. And he gives a very nice modern Hebrew translation, Tzivyon HaShabbat. That this is not within the spirit of Shabbat. And Halacha L'Maisa, that's really the reason why he asks. And this is a delicate question. What is Sivyon HaShabbat? What is of the Dechol? There's a lot of subjectivity here. And I remember telling you, and he's a well-known personality today, and he's a wonderful Jew, Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro of North Miami Beach. David Golda, shake your head, North Miami Beach, correct? Thank you. Okay. So I remember I was once there for Shabbat Scholar in Residence. And he's a product of Lakewood. His grandfather was a YU graduate. I could even be his father was a YU graduate. But he's already a Lakewood product. But a very wonderful individual, a real Vadimkeit. And he's had serious illness and recovered. And he devotes his whole life now, Leman Hashem, Leman Am Yisrael. And I remember one Shabbat I told you, he came in Mincha. He was Ibigarash. I don't know how to say that in Hebrew or English. Just overwhelmed. He saw kids playing baseball on Shabbos from kids. And he gave a Musa Shmuas, gave them hell. I've seen kids in Hillcrest not playing baseball, but playing basketball on Shabbos. It's a delicate question. What do you do with these kids? Halavai, we could have them go to a shir. But on the other hand, these are kids. It's a long Shabbos now that this time of year. Do we have to give them hell, or do we have to look the other way and try to entice them to a little higher understanding of Tzivyon, the Shabbos, of the Dechol? But that's the case under discussion, and I wonder if anyone checked out the Jewish press, did they ever apologize to Rav Menashe Klein by saying in his name, drive your bike to shul early when people aren't around, it won't be marid ayin. Did they ever apologize? I know I'm waiting for an apology, and I can see I better not stand on the one foot. By the way, if I mentioned Rabbi Melamed, let me just say that in this Friday's Besheva, there was a full page article by him justifying his speaking with that reform lady, rabbi in France. And the heart of it is dealing with the Rav's point of view, and the 40 minutes they held me on the telephone reflects in the article. I introduced the term, the difference between klapei chutz, klapei pnim, and it's right there in the article. It's very nicely done. And again, the issue hangs fire. I have no opinion. I don't really know what they spoke about, but the Rav certainly didn't answer entirely, but kugam lo hitir legamrei. You have to find the middle road. Okay. Let's move on. And this is a very fascinating question, which I told you, halakha l'maisa, it affected me. And I feel very strongly about this. Let me quote the source, Mishnah Halakha Chelek Zayin Siman Nun Hei. Chelek Zayin Siman Nun Hei. So I told you I was in, I believe it was the Young Israel of Century City, Scholar in Residence. I had been there before. You see, with a Scholar in Residence, I once was in a shul where I heard the people maledicting the education committee. They bring a Scholars in Residence. What do they add? What do they have? What do they know? They're no different than our rabbi. We want a Scholar in Residence who has something special. And Baruch Hashem, they weren't complaining about me. So I had been here before in Young Israel of Century City, and it's right next to Beverly Hills. And they were serious. A few people came over here on Shabbos. They want to arrange with the janitor to record me when I get up to speak. And they told me, you won't see it, it'll be on the side, and it's the janitor. And I told them, I don't know, it bothers me. It's not uvda d'chol. It's not sivyon HaShabbat. This is not the way on Shabbat, and I didn't let them do it. To the best of my knowledge, they didn't do it. No, here you have a case, and the year is 1973, and the person asking the question is Harav Meir Katz, who he seems to know. And he writes, Acharei Drishat Lomar Tov B'Yedidut, and B'Davar Shelato, listen carefully, Ba'am Ha'aretz Chasid. Now remember what I've told and said 1,000 times over in the last 61 years. Reb Yisrael Solanta fell flat in his face from the time he started preaching Musa. If he has 1,000 devotees, I'm overstating the case. You would never say about a Musanik, I'm Eretz Meitnuat HaMusa. In order to be a Musanik, you got to be a Talmud Chacham. You have to be on a level. And here he says, remember what I told you, Hasidus conquered millions upon millions, millions of Jews until today. In the world today, there have to be at least 300,000 Hasidic Jews, if not more. Satmar itself, Lubavitch, Bavov, Ger, Belz, maybe 500,000, maybe more. I don't know. Wow. How many of them are real Lamdanim? But to be a Hasid, there's very many levels. You can be Reb Menachem Zemba, as Eichet Given a Chassid. You can be the Maram Shapiro, as Eichet Given a Chassid. You can be Reb Menachem Kasha, as Eichet Given a Chassid. You can be Reb Nissen Plushkin. He stood before the Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, it was Yotzeit, was a few days ago, with the Chilu Urechimu, and Reb Nissen Plushkin, the Rav shook in his presence, who he was. Reb Nissen Plushkin, Posek Mufak, the man who wrote the Sefer on Mikvot. And to be a chassid, there are many levels where you can be a total ignoramus. And here, I love it. He says, I'm Aretz Chassid. Give Rakefet a copyright here. Beautiful. What did this ignoramus boor do? The word is written out in transliteration, no Hebrew, no English. Tape recorder, Erev Yontif, Al Yedei Sha'on, Ubi Yontif, B'Sha'ah Shehetchil HaRebbe Lichit Palel, Pa'al HaRecorder, V'Hiklit Kol HaTfilot Shel Yontif Shel HaRebbe. Could you imagine, had a tape recorder and had it timed, probably figured out, davening, all right, Hasidim daven late, let's say they began 9:30, and the Rebbe would take over Yishtabach, let's say, in, it was 9:30 by 10. Tape recorder went on 5 to 10, and he recorded the entire Shachris. The next day he recorded Musaf. Oh my gosh, he has the Rebbe, and you know what a Rebbe means to a Chassid. And if you've seen the Rebbe davening, and no one knew what he was doing, because he hid the recorder inside the Amud, whatever that means. The Amud, I guess, where the Rebbe davens, inside the Amud, where you would generally keep a Siddur, a Talis. He put the tape recorder in right next to the Rebbe. The Rebbe didn't know, and no one saw it. And now the person is asking the question, can he enjoy listening to this tape recording of the Rebbe? Now, I want to tell you, this question is not so far-fetched. I'm looking at a whole group of gentlemen who are experts in the computer. No, go to YouTube, type in Yesala Rosenblatt, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha, and you will get tape recordings made of Reb Yesala Rosenblatt on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur. Are you allowed to listen to these tape recordings? Not such a far-fetched question. I know a guy named Darren Rakefet who went out of his mind a few months ago, and it already happened twice. One of the Satna Rebbeim spent Shabbat in Svat, and there's a total video of the whole Hitva Adut, the whole Fabrengen with the Rebbe on Shabbos in Svat. And Chaim Shulsen, who I yet know from the day one in his Berlamon Shel Charedim, and he functions today out of Miami Beach. It's an amazing world. That's all I can say. I knew him when he was a Hebron Yeshiva boy and married a dear Talmidah of mine. And it didn't last long, the wedding. But it didn't last long, the marriage, I should say. And he went crazy, and he's right. Where do you have a heter to video a Chassidic Rebbe, Chassidic Tish on Shabbos? And they gave an answer that I told you that the people doing the video were Russian Goyim. I also told you this is the biggest farce in the world. Gris has, we also are part of it. We hired Shmira Kahalacha, which is in Israel, people are smart. Here we have advertising agencies that cater to Haredim, Datiyim Lumiyim. You ever see the pictures? They're selling the Tanuva products. So if it's in a Haredi publication, Minzeta Hasidish Yid, all dressed in black, and with his kids, and they're eating the Tanuva product, cheese, whatever it is, gil, whatever, sour cream, thinking in English, I don't know how to say sour cream in Hebrew, but gil, etc. Then you cater to the Datiyim Lumiyim, so they have pictures, not Chas v'Chalila with a black kippah tzrugot, open shirts, white shirts, Shabbos stick, the father, the kids, and they're having Tanuva's latest product with a fabulous hashgacha, and they cater to elements. Same thing with the shmirah. If you have shmirah, you have to have shmirah 7 days a week. Why do you do Shabbat on a campus like Chris? You have the cameras working on every angle. There's a screen downstairs with 12 different divisions, the back, the front, the side, and you have to someone monitoring it. So they tell you on Shabbat that it's a goy. a Russian guy. And it's the same concept. They got Russian Goyim. They claimed their fathers were Jewish. Their mothers were not. If you check it out, you'll find out the mother was Jewish. The grandmother was Jewish. The father was the guy. But when daf machin panasi, you got to make a living. So they claimed their Russian Goyim, and they have good panasa, shmirika hilchata. You all know in Bnei Brak the story. It made headline news. For years, they sold the chametz to a guy who came in Aliyah from Russia in the early 70s. And then the guy knew nothing. And many decades later, they found out that this guy's mother was Jewish. The grandmother was Jewish. It was the men who were goyim. But he took for granted he was raised as a guy in Russia. So he thought he's a guy. And wow, so many years later, they uncovered Bnei Brak, who they were selling their chametz to. So this heter, that you got a heter to record a rebbe mit sein tish, mit sein fabrengen, with the slinigunim on Shabbos, to me it's overwhelmingly usa, 100%. So this poor guy, he is a chassid, and they don't say which rebbe it is that was recorded, that the amaretz, and that's the word that's used in the rest of the tshuva, they don't call him the chassid. They call him the Amoritz. Are you allowed to listen? All right, so this takes us. It's a whole sugya, Masechet Shabbat. I'll give you the final source. Shulchan Aruch, Orachayim, Siman, Shin, Yud, Chet. Din HaMavashel B'Shabbat. And this came up time and time again. It comes up in modern times. A Jew cooks on Shabbat. So you look into the Shulchan Aruch, b'mezid asur lo liolam l'acharein v'mutar l'motzai Shabbat miyad, b'shogeg asur bo bayom gam l'acharein uli erev mutar lo gam miyad. So it's a whole difference if it was done on purpose or done by accident. If it was done by accident, it's forbidden on Shabbat, but Saturday night, it's permitted to, let me just quote it properly. If it's done on Shabbat, b'mezid, it's forbidden for the person who did it forever. And everyone else, Matzai Shabbat, right away, doesn't have to wait Kadesh Yaseh, right away it's permitted. If it's done accidentally, it's forbidden on Shabbat for everybody. But Motzai Shabbat, right away, it becomes permissible for everyone. Even the man who cooked the chickens, roasted the chickens, it's permitted because it was b'shogeg. You look into the Mishnah Brura, so if you really are stuck, you can be samach on the Vilna Gaon, that the Vilna Gaon paskened a little bit differently, that the shogeg mutolo gam miyad, that the whole concept of waiting till after Shabbat is when it's b'mezid, not the shogeg. So of course, in this case here, where the man didn't do the recording, someone else did the recording, and it's now after Shabbat, it's after Yontif, so obviously it should be permitted for someone who did not do the Issa to listen to the recording. But then the person asking the question said, why is this an Issa? What's wrong here? Why can't the Amharetz, who did the recording, why can't he listen? What did he do wrong? And they throw in the curveball. What is the difference between this and the electric lights? We all use a timer. No one here says, I don't use a Shabbos clock. We used to use the word a time clock. But I was told that in modern times, everyone uses the word a Shabbos clock, all right? I grew up, the word was time clock. either word is correct. For general populace, it's a time clock. For us in particular, it's a Shabbos clock. But I want to tell you, people use a time clock for other reasons too. Go to Florida, go to a gated community, and people are traveling. They don't want the thieves to know they aren't home. So they have the electricity going on 7 o'clock at night till 1 in the morning, leave an ambience that someone is home, someone is in the house. So a time clock may be a more correct word. But be it as it may, he asked the question, what's the difference between this and a time clock? All right, this is a very interesting question. And halacha lemaisa, what's wrong? Let him hide the recording. What's wrong? Okay, so first of all, I have to tell you, this goes back to a very basic sugya that I believe you've all studied. It's at the heart of the issue. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Zayin Amid Bet. I quote, it's a Mishnah, and there's an entire Gemara, and this is, you've all touched this one way or another in the course of learning. Beit Shammai Omrim, Ein Shorin Diyo V'Simanim V'Kashinim, Ele Kedei She'Yushuru Miba'od Yom, U'Beit Hillel Matirin. And I'll quote the English translation from Schottenstein. We may not soak ink, dyes, or vetch unless there is significant time for them to become completely soaked while it is yet day. And Beit Hillel permits it in either event. What is vetch? So you look into the footnote, a type of bean that is soaked in water and used for fodder. And what are we talking about here? We're talking about the sugya of Shvitat Kalim. What is a Jew responsible for on Shabbat? We can't do malacha. What about our utensils? Can they do malacha? I have a washing machine. I put the wash in before Shabbos. I turn it on. 20 minutes later, Shabbat comes in. My washing machine is working. That's exactly the Mishnah. You're soaking the beans. It's going to take an hour till the task is finished. You started 3 minutes before licht benching. Are you allowed to have it continue on Shabbat? And this is the tremendous machloket Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. According to Beit Shammai, Shvitat Kalim, I'm not allowed to work. My donkey's not allowed to work for me. Every type of animal is not allowed to work for me. My male servant, my maid servant is not allowed to work for me. Or no, I'm not allowed to work on Shabbat. But what I own, they can do whatever they want. As the Perushim on the Chumash say very clearly, if you're going to stop an animal from cutting grass on Shabbat, the animal will starve. It's inui nefesh. He doesn't enjoy it. That's for sustenance. He has to do it to eat, to keep alive. He can't do something for me. I can't put a load on him for him to carry. But he's allowed to do what he wants. Same thing with Kalim. Kalim can't work for me when I'm doing the work. But if it was set up before Shabbat, the Kalim certainly can continue working on Shabbat. This is what we paskin lahalacha. And this comes up in many issues in modern life. For instance, we once alluded to it. What if you're running a kibbutz and you have a communal dining room, and on Shabbat you have I've seen these commercial machines to wash the dishes, a dishwasher, but it's a big dishwasher. It keeps on flowing in front of you with going back and coming back again. Oh, it's not a simple one that you would use in your house. Well, you put it on a time clock. Are you allowed to use it on Shabbat? Again, it's the same Shaila. Your Kalim are working for you. You're not doing a thing. Everything is automatic. So this question, when you get involved with this Amaretz, doing what he did with the Rebbe, why are we getting upset? Why are we getting angry? It's Shvitat Kalim. The tape recorder is working for you, but he set it up before Shabbat. What's wrong? Where is it any different than this sugya in Shabbos where we paskin like Beit Hillel? And Shvitat Kalim is absolutely mutter. And that's la halacha la maisa. All of Torah, all of Shabbat is based upon that principle. Okay, so it's a very, very good question. But Reb Menashe Klein is very adamant. There's one tremendous difference. In all the cases we allude to, yes, you set it up before Shabbat. On Shabbat, you do absolutely nothing. It's all automatic. Here, with the tape recorder, you set it up on Shabbat. But on Shabbat, the Rebbe is davening. His voice is being recorded. His voice, his davening, is giving you the tape, is giving you the songs, is giving you the nusach, is giving you the pleasure, the chance, the opportunity to hear the Rebbe, to record the Rebbe, to have it. It's like when I hear the Rav on tape giving a shiur, I'm in seventh heaven. Here it's happening on Shabbat. Yes, you set up the mechanism before Shabbat, but it's not like lights, where on Shabbat you have nothing to do with the lights. It's not like a dishwasher, a commercial dishwasher, a dishwasher designed for a kibbutz to clean up 1,000 plates on Shabbat that you're going to use again for Sudah Shlishit, or to clean up what you had the Friday night in the middle of the night. You run the machine with a time clock, and Shabbos morning the tables are set again. Here, it's your voice that is being recorded. It's not something totally distant from you. There is an interconnection. And I'll quote the Mishnah Halacha, Mikol makom hamaaseh maaseh Shabbat, shehu naaseh maaseh b'Shabbat al yedei Yisrael, v'zeh pashut. And he quotes earlier Rishonim, early Achronim, I should say, that deal with exactly the same Shaila. I'm quoting from the Tshuva, I'm quoting the Shaila, I'm quoting something that you are not familiar with. Let me tell you. A little part of my life I devoted to collecting Shayurim of the Rav. Someday it'll be more public knowledge and more public enjoyment than it is today, but whatever the reasons are, the benefit, the public cannot fully benefit from this undertaking. So you say Shurim of the Rav. Where were these Shurim recorded? How were they recorded? All right. In modern times, you're recording me now. I don't even know what you're doing, how you're doing it, where you're doing it. It's being recorded. Fine. Generally, in the old days before the plague hit us, it's already ancient history, there was a little digital mechanism in front of me when I spoke, it recorded me. Then you all remember the tapes, the cassettes, okay? Then I'll go a little further back, reel to reel. How many of you studied with the Rev in the 1950s? And it took four fellas. Let me mention the name of the one in charge, my dear friend, Aaron Bat, Seichet Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Aaron Bat. It took four fellas to carry in the tape recorder. How many of you remember that, how heavy it was? So, wow, couldn't hide it, no matter what you did already. Ah, do you know before the reel-to-reel how they recorded? On phonograph tapes. 78 RPM, you recorded on the phonograph, on the record. I can tell you before that, I even saw, and I couldn't believe my eyes, and I had no recollection, they recorded on something that looked like a wire going up in the air. And in order to break that down to a computer program that could survive the passage of time, we had to contact the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., pay a fortune, but were able to break it down into a recording that the modern world can utilize. Now, you come back to the phonograph, I can tell you, one of the earliest Yahrzeit Shiurim in the early 40s was recorded on something like, if I recall correctly, 7 or 8 records, each one having to be turned over, and that already was a great achievement. And this is what he refers to here. He says that there's a whole discussion. He quotes the Beit Yitzchak. The Beit Yitzchak was the grandfather or the great-grandfather of Nat Lewin. You all know the famous lawyer, Nat Lewin. This was his great-grandfather. His grandfather was the son-in-law, the Reisha Rav, Rav Aaron Levine, was the son-in-law of the Beit Yitzchak. And Rav Yitzchak Shmelkes was a posek mufak 120 years ago approximately. And he dealt already with this problem. And they spoke about recording people on Shabbos with the phonograph. And he felt that it's absolutely forbidden. What is the Issa? That already is difficult to decide. It certainly is not an Issa d'Oraita. An Issa d'Oraita is always measured, and this is back and forth in all the Rishonim and all the Achronim. It goes back already to Chazal, the Lamed Tet Melachot. In order to be an Issa d'Oraita, it has to be something that was done in the Mishkan. And if it wasn't done in the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan, putting together the Mishkan, all this is a Malacha d'Oraita. Anything that was not in the Mishkan generally falls into the category of a Derabbanan. And here you certainly didn't have a phonograph in the Mishkan. Maybe it's Ketiva, writing. This is a very interesting question. What is writing? But all of us know that writing, anyone who's studied the tremendous literature which has evolved in the state of Israel because of the Israeli army, and you have to understand, 50, 60 years ago, very few people asked shilas. It was a different Israel. Today, Baruch Hashem, in the army, you don't want to give percentages, but the religious Jew, the religious officer, is far from a miyut. I don't want to say it's a majority, but it's a miyut hanikar. And endless shilas have been asked. So you all know that when you go into battle, when we crossed into Lebanon, everyone's name is written down at the crossover area. It was Rosh HaNikra. There's an army gate there, a machzom, and anyone going into a war zone, they write down your name with your misparishi. It's for obvious reasons. God have mercy. You don't want to have a gunat. You want to be able to identify anyone who's missing, anyone who lo aleinu fell in battle. So it's very important. What about Shabbos? So you always know that the psak would always be, try to write with your left hand. If you can write with your left hand, so it's einu kederech hamalacha, it's shinui, it's kala'achi yad. So if that's the case, writing on a phonograph, writing on a tape recorder, can't be an issa d'oraita, it's an issa d'rabbanan. You can give many reasons why it's an issa d'rabbanan, but it certainly is not a d'oraita, because it is derech shinui, it's keliyachi yad. And that's what the Beit Yitzchak Paskin, that it certainly, it's velo garam miktive keliyachi yad bepiv oberaglo, the pata mechatat, the ain kan rak isur de rabbanan. And he says, the Beit Yitzchak, it's no different than writing, put the pen in your mouth and write with the pen in your mouth, or put the pen between your thumbs and write with using your foot. It would be, it can't be any said you're right. All right, it could be ke'ein, it would be the rabbanon. You can come up with reasons, but certainly you're not allowed to record on Shabbos on Yontif, and this is no different. A tape recorder and recording into a phonograph, and I actually held the records in my hands of the original recording at the Yahrzeit Shiur. I believe it was 43 or 44, if my memory is correct. And of course, today it is available, and no one realizes the effort, the expense, what went into it. Kanayin Hara, that's life. You do great things and they don't remember you tomorrow, and you have to be humble about it and accept it with a smile on your face. All right. In this same tshuva, he makes reference to the question of an umbrella on Shabbat, which I'm not going to touch upon now. I'm going to do it later, because that's another very fascinating topic. Another question that the Mishnah Halacha raises, tell me, how do you do a tape recorder? It's your mouth. Can you do an iser with your mouth? Tell me, what about blowing out candles on Shabbat, on Yontef? A birthday party. And they forgot it was Shabbat, or they didn't care. And they're blowing out candles. Mechika. It could be, it's all right, the question of mantikun, or it's certainly an issa d'rabbanan, if it's the oraita, it could be you have to blow it out, because you need the area to rebuild on it. Could be with a birthday cake, you blow out the candles, and then you want to put whipped cream on it. So you couldn't put whipped cream on the cake, because man, there were candles burning. But once the candles are blown out, you can put whipped cream on the cake. Could be an issa d'oraita. But there you see it's with your mouth. So you see, once again, the shaila of recording on Shabbos could be, it's not an issa d'oraita, but it is an issa d'rabbanan. It's writing keliyachi yad. It's blowing out candles. You're blowing your mouth. What you're doing affects it. And then what about the Rebbe who was davening and knew nothing about this? Is he doing something wrong? And here he gets involved with the whole question of the electric eye. And all of us have had that experience. Here we are going to Moscow, going to Leningrad, and even under the communists, they already had big hotels. Tourism was important. It was safer then than now, because the KGB guarded the area around the hotels that nothing should happen to a Western tourist. There would be headlines in the New York Times, so they keep the drunks away, the criminals away. Today, it's a free society like New York today. Herbie, you can't walk the streets of Borough Park unless your life insurance is paid up today. Take my word for it. There's more shooting going on. The Bronx, where I came from, you need what do they call it? A metal plate on your chest to see that the bullets bounce off. We'll put it that way. A bulletproof West. Yomo is correcting me or giving me the magic word. So you if you go to Moscow, you go to Leningrad, one of the biggest problems we had, these fancy hotels, and you didn't choose the hotel. The tourists placed you so they could watch you. These hotels, in order to walk in, there's a magic eye. The doors have to open. How do you get into the hotel on Shabbos? How do you go out of the hotel on Shabbos? All right, we paskind la halacha. Crowds were always coming, going. Go in with the crowd. Wait till it opens, and then you run ahead. But the very interesting shaila, I'm doing nothing. I'm doing nothing. I'm a mitasek. I'm walking. And yet, you are affecting the electric eye. It opens doors. What about coming back from the cult on Friday night for 45 years or so or more? I davened every Friday night at the cult hall. And walking back, Rehov Agron, the American consul, the videos were working around the clock. Am I allowed to walk by or should I cross the street to the other side? What about my parking lot? We have to have a gate, because if you don't have a gate, everyone comes in today to park a car in Jerusalem. It's not a simple challenge. Remember the Seinfeld episode where they can't find a parking spot on the Upper West Side and what goes on? Whoever dreamt that would reach Jerusalem? And I got news for you, it's going to get worse, not better, because all of the Western world now is starting to pour in. They suddenly woke up, La Lota Tsabarina. Anyone who reads what Jabotinsky said in the 30s in Poland, in Russia, and pleaded with the Jews to come in Aliyah. Oh boy, a lot of Jews are reading that and getting the message, as you all know. And park a car, wow, what difficulty. But my gate, when you walk past the gate, a light goes on. The magic eye, it catches you walking past, it blinks. And on Shabbat, you're allowed to walk in that way, not allowed. And I can tell you, halacha l'maisa, I don't walk into my parking lot on Shabbat. I'm machmir, it's a gate mishdan in Lebanon to walk a few feet out of the way. I have to walk up with steps, not the end of the world. Coming home on Rehov Agron, I never cross the street. I always walk the safest, quickest way, because I said that to cross the street and more effort so that Arabs shouldn't attack the American consul, I'm not mechuyev to be machmir. That was my own feeling. But you can do as you wish. Lahakel, lachumra. One time a sign was put up in the door to my house that it's forbidden to walk through the parking lot on Shabbat. A day later, there was another sign, the Lamdonim in the building, another sign put up that this one is mekil, that one is mekil. All right, but this problem is endless. And Allah had kama v'kama, sahat nishtatam, it doesn't taste good, it doesn't look good. A Rebbe, a Chassidic Rebbe, is davening on Shabbos and Yontav b'kavana, filled with his talis ibn cup, and imagine
phone down.
What?
Push your microphone back up, you pushed it down accidentally.
Imagine the Rebbe, is it okay now? Oh, it's okay? Yeah, okay. So imagine the Rebbe is davening with Kavana B'Kedusha V'Tara, and he's being recorded. And his feeling is that it's absolutely not right what the Chassid did. The fact of the matter is that, all right, you can hear the recording afterwards. You can't say there's a Nisa. You can hear Yossel Rosenblatt afterwards. You can't say it's forbidden, but it wasn't right. and he says the chassid has to do tshuva, and he should also ask his Rebbe Mechila that he put the Rebbe in an embarrassing situation. I'll quote his words, shegaram lo ksat mikhsho. That imagine a Hasidic Rebbe davening b'kedusha v'tara, and you are recording him on Shabbat. And this is what he paskins l'halacha, and this is the Mishnah halacha. And this tshuva is, I need not tell you, it comes us back. What is the yisa? What is wrong? And ultimately, the answer is, sisnish shabbatik. The tzivyon shel Shabbat, there's something the matter, something is wrong. And Klal Yisrael, to the best of my knowledge, no one is recording speeches on Shabbat. And by the way, sometimes I've given talks on Shabbat filled with chiddush and insight and sources, and it's lost if it's not recorded. But ein ma lasot, Shabbat is Shabbat, and the Kedusha Tayom, somehow there's something wrong. We're turned off when someone is going to record, and imagine hiding it in the shtenda. The Rebbe doesn't know. The rabbi is preaching. It's hidden in the shtenda. The rabbi speaking doesn't know. All right. Klal Yisrael accepted the psat of the Mishnah Halachot.
If just move it a touch away from your mouth, just to your right, a little bit. Okay.
Is it good? Okay. All right, let me come to the final topic. We'll touch upon this term. Let me come to the umbrella. Very fascinating question. And Yitzchak and I, Rabbi Rubin and I, once discussed this years ago. I'm quoting, first I'll work backwards. There are two famous tshuvot written. One by the Chatam Sofer, and one by the Noda B'Yehuda. Now, you all know, you can't get any greater authorities than the Chatam Sofer and the Noda B'Yehuda. In the Litvische Welt, not too many poskim dealt with the various achronim the way they did in the Hungarian world, the way they did in the Svadic world. But even the Litvakin, Reb Moshe Feinstein, when it was a Chatam Sofer and Noda B'Yehuda, he had to deal with it. You couldn't deal with the topic they dealt with and ignore them. These were poskim shichman lamala mikol ha'am. The Chatam Sofer is Orach Chaim, Chelek Orach Chaim, Tshuva Ayin Bet, 72. And he's dealing here with the Noda B'Yehuda. He says, I saw in the Noda B'Yehuda that he deals with the question of a parasol on Shabbat. A parasol is an umbrella. And the Noda B'Yehuda struggles that it might even be an Issa D'Oraita. And the Chatam Sofer writes, I can't agree with him. And what are we talking about? We're talking about where a guy would open it for the Jew on Shabbat. So he says, yeah, a guy would open it for the Jew. What issue would there be here? Certainly not more than an issue of Shvut. You're telling the guy to do something for you on Shabbat, which may have a prohibition to it. And perhaps it shouldn't be done. But to go and claim it's really much more than a minor aveira, I don't agree. And then he goes in, he raises the question, what could be wrong here? And he says, even if you claim it's a no-hell, you're building a tent, but it's an no-hell array, it's temporary. Everyone knows you open an umbrella, you're going out, the sun is out, it's raining. In China, I remember we were in Hong Kong. We were there during June, it had to be, perhaps July. Everyone is walking with an umbrella, the sun, all right? Rain, I need not tell you, you walk with an umbrella. But it's only a temporary binyan, certainly not an isa d'oraita. And if you want to say that perhaps an umbrella resembles a tent, even though it's temporary, but we never saw anything like this in the base, in the Mishkan. The Mishkan, there was never any tent that was like an umbrella that you walked with, that was not stationary. The only tents in the Mishkan, you built the walls, the side, the krashim, the yiriyot, everything was stationary. Here it moves, and therefore if it moves, it can't be an isa d'oraita. You did not find that in the Mishkan. Your question will be answered in a minute when we deal with the Nodub Yehuda. Okay? So he makes these distinctions. And furthermore, when we speak of an ohel, what do you mean an ohel? An ohel is a building. It's around you. Who ever heard of an ohel where you cover yourself? All you're involved with is an ohel. And he goes on and on, the Chatam Sofer, many different reasons why there certainly is not a Nisa d'oraita, and maybe there's not even a Nisa d'rabbanon. And he says, if a guy opens it for you, could be a Baal Nefesh should be Machmir. It's the famous words that we saw last year in the Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Brura. A Baal Nefesh should be Machmir. But listen to these words. He says, Ve'ein laharish ha'olam b'shvil zeh. I wouldn't make a major issue out of it. There's no sense shouting and yelling and claiming it is forbidden. Me'ika hadin, very hard to see what the Iser is. And he writes the Tshuva, Hanira laniva dati katafti, Po Pressburg, and he gives the year, and this was the Chatam Tov Sofer's Tshuva. Fine. His Tshuva took up not more than one column. That's it. One page, half here, half here. One column. You come to the Noda B'Yehuda, this very same question. Take a look how large the tshuva is, how many pages. This is all the Noda B'Yehuda. All right, the print is a little larger. It's an edited edition, but 20 times the size, I would say. What's the source? Noda B'Yehuda, Mahadura Tanita, the second edition, Orachayim. It's like Chelik Bet, Maraduta Tanita, in contradistinction to Maraduta Tana, Kama, is like volume 1, volume 2. Orachayim, Siman Lamed. And the Tshuva is from Prague, where the Noda B'Yehuda was the Rav, the Afbeitin, to London. We don't know to who. It just says to London, and he writes Halufa Torani. We get a name, Maharatu Kvaldo Leib HaKohen. But what happens here is Leib HaKohen is writing to the Noda B'Yehuda that he was very upset that he saw people carrying, he visited London, and he saw people walking with parasols, with umbrellas on Shabbat, on Yontif, and he wrote to some rabbi there. He doesn't tell us who. And the rabbi defended the practice. There's no isha. And now he's turning to the Noda B'Yehuda. Who is right? Did I have a right to be upset? Or is the rabbi correct, giving many reasons why there's no halachic problem with using an umbrella on Shabbat Yontif? On Shabbat, obviously, where there's an Erev and Yontif, with a guy opening it, or you're opening it the day before Shabbat and Yontif. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam Shehakol Yehiyeh B'Dvaro. Okay, and he describes it. What is a parasol? V'hu kli asui lahagen b'chama mipnei hachama u'bikshamim mipnei hakshamim. And it protects you, the sun, the rain. Hadam naso al rosho, v'hu machahil al rosho. And that's the question. And the Nodbi who the writes, I don't know who this man is, who this Chacham is who wrote to you. I see he's a Talmud Chacham. I see his reasons are solid, but nevertheless, I disagree with him. And ani lo nosei panim, I will let my opinion be known, even though I admit he's a Talmud Chacham, I don't know exactly who he is. Now, this is a beautiful Gemara. Tell me, let me quote the Gemara. Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Chet Amid Bet. Yomo, can I have my baseball hat? Okay. This is my mask. Okay, special mask. Serves a dual purpose, to save my life and to give a message. First time I'm wearing this hat, because the Yankees have announced spring training begins July 1st, and the season opens approximately 3 weeks later. I go back to being a kid again. It will add years to my life. Baruch Hashem. Tell me, are you allowed to wear this hat on Shabbat? The Gemara on Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Chet Amid Bet. Klemi Omer Rav Sheshit Berei De Rav Idi. Hai Siana Shari. Vat Ma Siana Asa. Lo Kasha. Kan De Yitle Beit Tafach. Kan De Leit Beit Tafach. Ela Meata Sharviv Gelima Tafach. Hachi Nami De Mechuyav. De Mechuyav. Ela Lo Kasha. Hada mahadek, hada lo mahadek. You know, what is this Gemara talking about? My dear students, look, this is a Sinai. You have a brim. If the brim is a tefach, maybe that's an ohel. I put my hat on. All right, I'm putting on a temporary ohel. I'm going to take it off again. But a temporary ohel is also forbidden. How are you allowed? All right, it's not an Issa D'Oraita. So it's quite a Gemara. So the Gemara says, well, there's a difference if it's a tefach or not. So let's see, is this a tefach? What do you say? There it is, there's a tefach. So the Gemara says, wow, if this is forbidden, tell me, you davened this morning? How many of you put the talis over your head? I reach Ishtabach. I put the talis ibim cup over my head. Shabbos, you put the talis over your head. Well, if you're not careful, you're making a tremendous tent. It's covering you way over the head. We wear big taliyot today. On my recent big birthday already a number of years ago, my grandchildren gave me a beautiful mutton talis that doesn't fall off. They make it differently, sew it differently. Can I in Hara, I throw the talis over my head? How are you allowed? So the Gemara asks, if you're going to say the hat is forbidden because it has a brim, then any talis, any davening, any time over your head, You're making a tent. You're making a ohel arayi. So the Gemara answers, no, it's an entirely different reason. Mahadek lo mahadek. What does that mean? That if the hat fits tight on your head, then you can wear it Shabbos. If the hat is loose, you can't wear it Shabbos. What's the difference? Look into Rashi. If it's loose, you might take it off. You're more comfortable if you don't need the hat on your head. You're more comfortable walking with the hat in your hand. You will carry a dalet amot b'shut harabim. So it has nothing to do with a temporary tent. It's not the sugya of a felt hat. That's the translation in Schottenstein. I think my example is simple enough. It's not the example of a baseball cap on Shabbos on Yontif. It's not. It has to do with loose or not loose. If it's loose, you'll take it off. You walk with it. It's a nisa the rabbanon. That's the sugya that the no w yehuda refers to. Well, if that's the case, then of course you have to deal with a umbrella. Is the umbrella loose, not loose? No, the umbrella you carry, the umbrella is there to protect you. Could be it's a bit of a chash if the rain stops and if the sun goes down and it's cloudy, could be you close the umbrella, but maybe there's nothing wrong with that. Carry, you're allowed. There's an Erev Shabbos, Yontif, you're allowed. Could be, but me'ika hadin, you can't asher it out and tent, because it's no different than the sugya in the Gemara in Shabbos. We're talking where there's an Erev. It's not talking B'shut HaRabim. They're talking where there's an Erev. The Gemara is Chayshish because then they were only talking places that weren't an Erev. He's wearing it on his head, so he'll take it off and carry. But here, Lachat Chilav, there's no Erev. No one in the world is going to be Matia. And then he goes on, well, you talk about this parasol, you talk about this umbrella. Is it really a machitza? Is it really forbidden? What do we mean by a machitza? A machitza has to be something, a tent has to be something that comes down. Here it doesn't come down all the way. It only is up, it's only over your head. It's not something that comes down. And then he goes back and forth. You talk about an umbrella. You talk about an ohel. You talk about the Mishkan. What do we mean by the Mishkan? The Mishkan, so he quotes the Yerushalmi. You see all the sources in the Nodabi Yehuda. What does it mean, a Mishkan? The Mishkan, God told us we're going to camp. We're going to in camp. We all just read Pashat Balotcha. Everything was done by the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it was temporary. You mean everything in the, it was a temporary ohel, that this is what we're talking about in the Mishkan, then every ohel you should ever make will always be a temporary ohel, and it will be an Issa D'oraita. So the Yerushalmi says, when God tells you to rest, to stop, to build, to pause, this is not temporary. That's considered Ohel Shel Keva. The minute they put up the Mishkan, it's considered permanent until God tells you to take it down and move further. It's the word of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But with an umbrella, it's a temporary object. It's here today. It's gone tomorrow. So it's temporary. It cannot be a Nisa D'oraita. It did not exist in the Beis HaMikdash. Then he deals with another Gemara, Lekula, Daf Kuf Lamed Chet Amid Aleph, Talit Kfula Lo Yaseh, V'yim Asoa Pato Aval Asur, Haya Karucha Lechut O Mishicha, Mutal Lintota Lachat Chila. What's he talking about here? Very simple. How many of you have had shuls where Friday night the women don't come to daven? Shabbos morning the women come. You have a mechitza that is pushed all the way over. Are you allowed to open it on Shabbos? Are you allowed to pull the curtain? And here you have an open gemara that if it's rolled up and there's one tefach loose, once there's one tefach, you can pull it further, even if you're pulling it 10 foot, 20 foot, 30 foot. You're allowed. There's no problem. It's not considered making a tent. It's an open gemara. What about if you have the curtain rolled up and there are loops, hooks, ready for you to open it? It's made for you to open it. It could be Me'ikar Hadin, even if it's not open at Tefach, you're allowed to pull it open. This is not considered making a tent on Shabbat. And if this is the case, a parasol and an umbrella, where its whole purpose is to protect you, it's when you open it, it protects. Later it's closed. It's not a no-hell. This is the normal usage. This is the way it has to be used. This is its purpose. It's no more than an ohel harai at the most, temporary. And here it's being used, open, closed. This is the normal usage. It's like a mechitza that it's rolled up, just it has hooks, eyes for you to grab and close it and open Gemara. It's mutar on Shabbos. So the Noda B'Yehuda goes through all these sources and he says, perhaps there is no Isser. You opened it before Shabbat. You asked the guy to open it, and all you're doing is carrying it to protect you from the rain. And this could be Me'ikar Hadin, it is muta. But he ends off the tshuva that halacha lemaisa maradayin. Me'ikar Hadin, he found so many different reasons lahakel, but ultimately, no one will know you opened it yesterday. No one will know that a Gentile opened it before you. And here's the key. Watch the last words. Avol al koponim mipnei maritayin yesh lo sro, ki mi yodea im arko me etmol, u bifrat B'day yatom hazeh, shenefishi inun b'nei Torah, yoteh mi b'nei bash ka. V'hanirel anivet dati katafti. What did the Noda B'Yehuda say here? Gemara and Shabbat, Kufla mitet amid aleph. Look it up. What are we talking about, bash ka? These were people who were Amei Haaretz, Einon B'nei Torah. And the Noda B'Yehuda says already in his time, they were the majority. There are more of them, Einon B'nei Torah. Shenefishe Einon B'nei Torah, Yoteh B'Bnei Bashka. That's what he's referring to. There are more of them than of us. And therefore, he's machmir lahalacha. He's worried about maradayin. My dear students, you saw the Chatam Sofer. You saw the Noda B'Yehuda. Chatam Sofer reaches a conclusion. Ein mashirin olamat. We shouldn't yell. We shouldn't shout. Me'ika hadin, it may be muta. Then know the Yehuda, when he goes through all the sources and he finally reaches the conclusion, not more than Marit Dayan. Yitzchak, I take you back to our discussion. When the Rav came back in 1935, he saw Yerushalayim for the first time and unfortunately the only time. And he commented, years later we heard it too from him. And I said, it's interesting. In Yerushalayim, you could tell the difference between the yeshivish Talmidei Chachamim and the Chachmat Yisrael Talmidei Chachamim. Look, we looked at him, and he told us, you saw what they did in Shabbos with an umbrella. When it was rainy, the yeshivish Shavel Talmidei Chachamim, no one went with an umbrella. The Chachmei Yisrael, Erev Shabbos, they opened their umbrellas, and they went with it on Shabbos. They said, you can tell where they were coming from. Halacha l'maisa, Klal Yisrael paskind not to use the umbrella. And here's Shmirat Shabbat Gehilchata. Here's the way he says it. I'm quoting volume 1, Perek Chav Dalet, 3rd edition, Sif Katan Tetvav. Again, I repeat, Shmirat Shabbat Gehilchata, 3rd edition, Perek Chav Dalet, Sif Katan Tet Vav. Gede Gadru Gedole Dorot Sichronim Lavracha. Viamru She'em Liv Toach Mitriya Shimshia Bishabatu Beyantov. Vagamim Chem Tuchat Miba Od Yom. Aim Lehish Tamesh Bahem Gam Bamakom She'yesh Erev. Wow. Like to know the Yehuda. Perhaps like the Chatam Sofer, even where there's an Erev. And you look into the footnote, the main reason is Marit Ayin. And the Shmirat Shabbat Hilchata quotes a Chazon Ish. And I want to end off this part of the class. Chazon Ish, Hilchat Shabbat, Siman Nun Bet. And he discusses this very problem. And finally he says, could be that the umbrella is forbidden because people will open it in Shabbat. And there, perhaps there is a Sheila of Tikkun Mana, you're creating an instrument, you're creating an implement because Kol Zman, the umbrella is not open. What purpose does it serve? All right, it can be a cane. That's true. If you saw pictures of Gedolei Yisrael of the pre-World War II generation, the famous picture of Chaim Oyser, of Shimon Shkup, you'll say they went Gaganyan with an umbrella, was like a cane. I guess in Europe it rained quite often, you needed an umbrella. But opening it could be, he says, and it could be it's of the chol, the majority of people ain't in B'nai Torah. You see, he's quoting the Chatam Sofer, he's quoting the Noda B'Yehuda, he's referring to it, although he doesn't cite them with, as a source. But then he says, V'harei ha-davam wasul l'chachomim l'gdog gedah b'mokom ha-pirtza. V'zeh yoter chamur me'isa prati li'achid. Ki zeh gedah la'am kulo. And that Chazon Ish is critically important, that you're not dealing here with individuals. An individual has a shaila, amolas mekel, amolas machmir, all right, you'll paskin what you paskin. Here you're dealing with the face of the Jewish people, with the public thoroughfare of the Jewish people. And the Gedolei Yisrael felt that if you would be matar umbrellas, it would be a breakdown in modern times. It's somehow the neshama of Am Yisrael was not willing to accept it. With all the coolest you could come up with, not willing to accept it. Could be they were choshesh, what Yomo just said, that if your mate with is an Erev, who heard of an Erev in New York, you would suddenly use it. They're using it in Manhattan. They came as an Erev surrounded by water. They'll be using it in Brooklyn, be using it in the Bronx. Could be in Eretz Yisrael, your mate an umbrella. They'll take it to mean you can do this on Shabbat and that on Shabbat. It would bring Shabbat down a level. And this is what the Chazon Ish said. When you're dealing with something in the public thoroughfare, ki segeda li'am kulo uledorot. And this is why it's so critically important. And this is why halacha l'maisa, we don't use an umbrella on Shabbat. On the other hand, as you can see, the Rav didn't say that these people who used an umbrella were incorrect or irreligious. He said it reflected the school of thought they were coming to. And I think it's a very interesting distinction which the Rav made, and which I can elaborate in 1 minute flat. Gedolei Yisrael have the worry that the Chazon Ish has. How do we perpetuate Judaism for the future generations? Chachmei Yisrael from the school of Wissenschaft did not necessarily have this worry, this concern. They were concerned what is correct, what is scientific, what is ausgehalten from the point of view of research. And if they felt the answer was lahakel, you can be mekil. Gedolei Yisrael had a different understanding. They had to see the future as well. And here you can see halacha l'maisa, why this difference in practice between Chachmei Yisrael and Gedolei Yisrael. So to summarize, what did we do today? We finished out three examples where Klal Yisrael, despite the fact that there was ample room lahakel, Klal Yisrael was machmir. Bicycles, and I'm still waiting to hear from Norm Schloss where he saw Yidden tzitzis flying in the air, riding bicycles on Shabbat or Yontif. I haven't seen it. That's all I can say. And I asked some other people, and they agreed with me. Maybe kids, yes, but those are tricycles, youngsters. But that's one example. The example of the recording on Shabbos is, of course, a much more powerful example, where imagine recording a Hasidic Rebbe, setting it up with a tape recorder, and, you know, the Amoret says, what's wrong? My time clock works, the electric lights. And, wow, imagine recording Drashot on Shabbat. You can understand that's a little bit more difficult. The umbrella is the third example, and there you have the Chatam Sofer, the Noda B'Yehuda, but ultimately the Chazon Ish, what he says, and my comment on it, the difference between Chachmei Yisrael and Gedolei Yisrael, the difference between Wissenschaft, das Judentum, and traditional Torah learning, it's, I hope, an insightful comment. It's two worlds that, not that they're in conflict, but they're two worlds where the goals, the commitments are quite different. And this would be a prime example, quoting the Rav, what he saw in 35. Halacha l'maisa today, I daven with some of the greatest Chachmei Yisrael, people who have won Pras Yisrael, and take my word for it, they don't carry umbrellas on Shabbat. But what you have today is more of a merging, more of a synthesis between traditional learning and scientific learning. And you want a simple proof that I'm right? Out of Yeshivat Chesda today are coming the finest edited editions of Rishonim, of Achronim. They've mastered Lakewood. They did some scholarship. I saw publications on letters of Gedolei Yisrael. I made a comment to someone from Lakewood who published. I said, now I understand why the graduate schools in Chochmat Yisrael are closing down. They don't have enough students. people are doing it on their own. If you know Shas and Paiskim and you're exposed to a few books of Chachmei Yisrael, you learn the approach very quickly. And because of your background, you succeed beyond anyone's wildest dreams. And Ein Hachinami, if you know what's going on in Israel, all the universities that have Mada HaYahadut, that at one time they were famous for, they have well-known professors, but they lack many students, or they get students who are not on the level that students were 30, 40, 50 years ago. Why? Yeshivat Hesda have blossomed and have broadened. And you can see the Maram Mirotenberg, his Chivat reissued on the highest standard, a Yeshivat Hesda product. You see the Sfat Emet, a Hasidic Sefer reissued on the highest level, a Yeshivat Hesda product. And you can go on and on with similar examples. My dear students, Be'ezrat HaNatan Liyof Koch, it's a very sad situation we're in. I need not tell you, none of us know how it will end, when it will end. We have tremendous problems here in Israel. I need not tell you in America, it's overwhelming, the problems. It's more overwhelming that a candidate for the presidency of the United States just mentioned that one third of America died of corona, 120 million citizens. If you're up to date on the news, you know what I'm saying. That's even a more serious problem. Hashem Yirachem. But we have to do the best we can. Tzrichim lehodot l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that Zoom was invented. There's a vote from the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim said the reason trains were invented and tracks and this type of travel, so we shouldn't be mevatel too much from Torah. In the old days, you traveled on a donkey, on a horse, a wagon driven by cattle, and all right, you were mevatel a week or so, but you learned b'hatmada rabba afterwards. Today, we don't have so much hatmada, and if we had time, we would waste endless time traveling. Thank God they invented the railroads. Imagine Zoom. I sit here giving shir, and people are looking at me from all over the world. So this is why the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us this gift. In this class, we'll pick up exactly where we left off, with switching gears a little bit. Reb Menashe Klein dealing with Yontif Sheni Shel Galyut and the problems there. Again, very, very fascinating. And we'll move on. We have all of Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch to do from Reb Menashe Klein. It opens worlds and worlds of learning and introspection and social reality to us. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat HaNatan Liyof Koach, I pick up RCA, and tomorrow we reach the moment that OU is not proud of. And as you'll see, it split the RCA, brother against brother, rabbi against rabbi. And very sad what ultimately happens, and a warning to us that Dvar Hashem zu halacha, and we shouldn't allow us to be swayed by other factors. But this particular case is not so simple when you see what the other factors were. Let me end off. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Morty, you want a title for today?